Hey, Nate Chenin from WRTI here. Before we start the show, I need to let you all know something, and it's important. Federal support for WRTI is ending. We're facing a $700,000 gap. The only way forward is together. That means stepping up and becoming a sustaining member. You're listening to The Late Set, so I think it's clear you're a pretty deep jazz fan, and you believe in the work we do. So become a sustainer. Hit donate in the WRTI app or at WRTI.org. Set up a sustaining gift in just a few taps and know that every month you're keeping this music alive, not just for you, but for everyone. Thank you. Let's go to the show. That is Sonny Rollins at the Village Vanguard playing a songbook standard titled Old Devil Moon. Josh, we are still in the Village Vanguard.
We can't help ourselves.
We never left.
Yeah, exactly. And why would you when Sonny Rollins is playing?
This is, of course, from the album A Night at the Village Vanguard, 1957. It is the first live recording ever made in that room. It is the first live recording made by our man of the hour, the tenor saxophonist Sonny Rollins, a man who is turning 95. And what better excuse to celebrate, pay tribute, and just bask in the glory of Sonny Rollins.
So many great records and such a wonderful individual. And I was talking about this with you earlier, Nate. One of the last really connected to the legacy of Charlie Parker.
Yeah, he is one of the last gladiators standing.
Yeah, for real. Last person in the Art Kane photograph.
He is, now that we have lost Benny Golson and so many others. And a real witness to history, obviously an important figure and contributor to the history. And someone who, I think this is crucial, who really, really cares about the lineage, you know, cares about what led up to his own language. You know, I wanted to play a bit of that song because, to me, in addition to capturing the room, which we've talked about.
And the finger snaps.
And all of that. You hear a little bit of laughter at the top of that track. And,
yes.
You know, years later when we got the complete recording, we realized that people are laughing at a joke that he made from the stage. You know, he's saying, we're going to play this song, Old Devil Moon. It's from a musical. I think it's from Kiss Me, Kate. Or maybe it's from Finian's Rainbow. I don't know. And then he sort of pulls the crowd. Well, what do you think? Which one is it? You know, people are shouting out, Finian's Rainbow, Kiss Me, Kate. And then he finally says, all right, well, this is Old Devil Moon from Little Abner. And, I love it because Sonny has a real sense of humor.
Yeah.
And you don't always get that. He has become a kind of, he almost seems like Moses. You know, you see him.
Kind of looks like him, too.
He looks like a prophet. He looks like an Old Testament prophet. But he has always been a really witty and, someone who actually really loves comedy. And so that's one reason I wanted to play this song. But also, you know, just the way that he phrases that melody with a kind of, he's so succinct and direct. There's a kind of brawn in it, but there's also, you know, this jocular lightness on his feet, you know? So all of that, I mean, I just feel like that tune is one that I would cue up for anybody being like, well, what is the musical character of Sonny Rollins?
Yeah.
To me, it's all there.
Ebulliency for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, just every time I hear him solo, I can just feel that sort of effervescent lift, you know? It's hard to make that a reality so consistently and the way he's done it for so many decades.
Right. Well, we should say now that in this episode of The Late Set, like I said, we're celebrating, but, you know, we couldn't keep it all to ourselves.
No, we'd like to share a little bit.
Yeah.
So we turned it over to the WRTI staff.
There's a lot of people who love Nuke, as he is also known, in the building here. And so we're going to go through, we're going to have a little bit of a listening session.
Yeah.
People pulling some favorite tracks and telling some stories. But yeah, let's, since we have you here, I've talked about Old Devil Moon.
Yeah.
Which we should say features a really important trio, Wilbur Ware on bass, Elvin Jones on drums. And it was, in addition to being the first Vanguard recording, the first Live Sunday recording, this is really an important document of the pianoless tenor saxophone trio. This is a tradition that Sonny, you know, he didn't invent it, but he certainly mainstreamed it with this recording.
And revisited it a number of times following.
Revisited it with other musicians on Way Out West.
Freedom Suite.
On the Freedom Suite. And the Freedom Suite features another very important drummer in Sonny's discography, someone he worked with quite a bit more than he did with Elvin. And that maybe cues up your pick.
It sure does, because it is Max Roach. So this is Sonny Rollins plus four, and we can hear Valse Hot. And we didn't even get to the solos.
I know.
I want to make the case, Nate, that, first of all, I think this is my favorite Sonny Rollins record. And I know that's a hard thing to say because he's got so many great records. And he recorded on just about every label at some point. Maybe not Columbia, but, you know, Blue Note, he was on all the labels. But I want to make the case that, you know, maybe it is the best Sonny Rollins record that sort of is and yet isn't a right. Sonny Rollins record.
Right.
You know, just because of the personnel. Sorry, just because of the personnel, if you look at this, if you know the music like we do, you would recognize immediately that this is the Clifford Brown Max Roach Quintet. Mm-hmm.
That raises the question. I mean, is this a, you know, Brown Roach Quintet album by another name?
No, because I do feel like it's Sonny's record.
Okay.
You know, like I feel like the choices and the music, you know, but there's just something about the cohesion of that band that's really just a carry forward of what they were already doing under Max and Clifford's name.
You can't get that vibe by putting a bunch of guys together in the studio.
No way. You know, which a lot of prestige sessions were.
Right.
Kind of, let's play some music.
You know, I have to say, too, that that song, Valse Hot, which is a Sonny Rollins tune, right, is historically important because there were very, very few examples of a swinging tune in waltz time at this moment in jazz history.
Right. I mean,
and Max, of course, is the king of swinging in odd meters. But what is this, 1955, 56?
This is 1956.
56. Yeah. So, you know,
I mean, Max, this is right before Ritchie Powell
yeah.
and Clifford perished.
Max begins swinging in 5-4 a little bit after this. And then it's, you know, not until 1959 that we get Dave Brubeck's Time Out. And so, you know, this is a few years ahead of the curve
yeah.
in terms of, you know, and it's not exotic. It's like they're really swinging that 3-4.
And just about every tune, pound for pound, this record, that's the reason why I like it. Everything on here is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's standout tracks, but there's also features for Clifford playing incredible solos, Max, but it still does feel like a Sonny session.
Yeah.
And yet, this band also already had its thing.
Yeah. Now, okay, this is my provocateur mode. We both independently, you know, when asked to bring in a track, we both reached for, you know, the mid 50s, which is really early in the Sonny Rollins trajectory. And as we said, this is a man who is celebrating 95. So have we done him a disservice by doing something that a lot of fans and critics do, which is fixate on the first, you know, 10, 15 years of his career?
I don't know. I mean, isn't this music so great, though?
I mean, that's like, probably the best rejoinder.
I mean, like,
but did you listen?
Yeah, I was just like, you know, like as far as the litmus test, you know, I always loved listening to Sonny Rollins whenever Max was on the throne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to me, anytime you hear Sonny Rollins and Max Roach together, I can't think of a bad recording that they were a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a part of many.
Quite a few. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first time that I heard Sonny Rollins in person was in the mid-1990s, probably about almost exactly 30 years ago. And it was at the Keswick Theater in Glenside. And subsequently, I got to see him, you know, at least a dozen times in New York.
Yeah.
A couple times in Europe on festivals. And I saw great nights and I saw okay nights. And this is the thing with Sonny Rollins, which I think those in the know really, really respect that. Sometimes I have seen audiences be really frustrated with him.
As I'm sure he was probably frustrated with himself.
He was the source of the frustration and it radiated out through the music to the audience. But this is a really interesting thing, right? Because as we're, you know, preparing to settle into this celebration, I feel like I have to bring this up as a defining attribute of this artist. He is a musician who has so much at his command and under his fingers. And he has a public that I think would be perfectly happy most of the time to hear him kind of just reeling out the mastery, you know?
Right.
And at every juncture, he is just determined to be in the moment and subject to the whims of the moment and the whims of like whatever he's got, you know, from moment to moment in the parameters of the music. And that's risky and it's, you know, it's risk and reward, right? But there's almost a perverse commitment to that.
I feel like it's an acknowledgement more than anything that creativity is messy.
Yes.
You know, you get documents in terms of these recordings where sometimes the bands were very well rehearsed or they were already, you know, an existing unit and that kind of cohesion is built into the product, you know, but for a live performance, it is open to what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And a great improviser and a great creative individual does allow that. Wayne Shorter allowed that. You know, multitudes. We could go on forever with musicians who allow that. So it's not meant to be perfect every night. And sometimes it is meant to be frustrating. And sometimes you literally can't pick your jaw up off the floor
right.
because you can't believe that someone, a human being, came up with the thing that made your, you know, hair stand.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh my God, I just shared that moment.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So you go for what the moment calls.
Especially, you know, I can recall at least a couple of times at Damrosch Park, Lincoln Center,
yeah,
where there'd be a kind of like carousel rut, you know, where he's soloing and he's kind of stuck in a mode, and you're like, how's he going to get out of this one? And then when he finally breaks free,
it's cathartic.
It's totally cathartic. It's like, you know, like the sun has broken through the clouds,
yeah.
You know, and it feels that much more like a release. Because you can celebrate with him, like, how am I gonna, there it is, you know, and then everybody kind of roars with him. I think that's it's a powerful way of making the mysteries of improvisation, of spontaneous composition, like really tangible for people.
Yeah. I mean, you can go in with a packaged thing too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily think that the audience that was coming for Sonny wanted that.
Right.
I mean, James Moody played Moody's Mood for Love for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go to a Leve show, for instance, you know, like it's very well packaged.
I did not have Leve on my bingo card for this conversation.
I'm willing to.
Thank you, Josh.
I'm like John Kruk with these Phillies broadcasts, man. Anything is going to come out of my mouth at some point. But, you know, it's like, it creates this beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the audience has been sold that sort of commercial product, they're expecting it to basically be reflected when they go to the show.
Mm-hmm.
But people who went to Sonny Rollins shows, they just knew that he's a big name mm-hmm. and anything can happen.
Yeah, although it must be said, there's going to be a calypso.
There will be a calypso, though, absolutely.
That's the one thing you can count on.
Yes, and maybe Bob Cranshaw would actually get up from the stool well, as he played electric
bass. Let's not get too crazy here.
All right.
So you and I have both spent hours in conversation with Sonny Rollins.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my case, it was usually for publication, and in your case, it was for the radio.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories to tell?
Well, I mean, the best story I have was when I interviewed him once at the Four Seasons, and he gave me a tin of Danish butter cookies.
Ah.
Which is probably like somebody just gave it to him and he didn't really want them,
right.
You know? But we had had a really wonderful conversation. I just remember him as being so incredibly generous. Mm-hmm. And I probably talked to him for close to an hour. And I ended up having to be the person to cut it.
Right.
You know, like, I always want to be respectful of people's time when I talk to them. And I figured I just got an hour with Sonny Rollins, and like that's mm-hmm. more than most ever.
Yeah.
But I could also feel that we could have kept talking,
uh-huh.
you know, because I just felt that he was that open and we had had such a good conversation that we could have kept talking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was really generous. Generous with his information too, you know.
Yeah.
Sonny's a great fan of sports. You mentioned Nuke earlier, which reminds me, we should probably start talking to all these great conversations we had with our host and our staff here at WRTI, because our veteran on the team, Bob Craig, sat down with our producer, Alex Arif.
All-star.
All-star.
All right.
And he talked about Nuke.
Bob Craig in the house.
Hey.
thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Alex. Pleasure to be here.
What does Sonny Rollins mean to you?
Well, let's see. Sonny Rollins means to me a man who took a lot of chances, took a lot of risks in what he was doing. One of the most impressionable things about Sonny, in addition to his wonderful playing, is the fact that this is a guy who not only composed, but he took some songs that nobody in the world would ever think he could turn into classic jazz. I'll use as an example, there's no business like show business. Now, you know, it's a lot of times a lot of jazz people will take a song that you didn't think could be converted to jazz, and they'll just go through certain little nuances and make it jazzy. But when Sonny Rollins does There's No Business Like Show Business, he actually makes it jazz. And you can hear him extending the notes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't know the song, say, hey, that's a jazz composition. Where, you know, it's a wonderful Irving Berlin song that
right.
has wonderful life. But when Sonny did it, it becomes a whole different thing.
Could we hear a little bit of There's No Business Like Show Business? Do you remember what musical this is from?
Annie, Get Your Gun. It's just so interesting what he does, you know, with something like that.
Well, the tempo.
The tempo is there. The ideas are there. They're all new. I mean, it's Sonny.
You can hear the touch points in the melody. Like, he's not completely abandoning the melody
mm-hmm.
in the beginning of the tune.
Right.
He's allowing you. You heard, there's...
You know the melody. There, yeah.
You can follow it.
You get a good melody. I mean, you can do pretty much anything with it. I mean, if you have the chops,
right.
you know what you're going to do. You can do it. And Sonny did that.
And did you ever get to see Sonny Rollins live?
I didn't.
Man.
I did not see Sonny Rollins live. A few times that I had gone to the Newport Jazz Festival and various concerts, I did not see him. I mean, you know, I'm not the biggest Sonny Rollins fan, but I always appreciated what he was doing and what he was playing and how disciplined that he was. Not only with his theories about jazz, but his instrument. You know, this is a guy that was so discerning about what he did. He took those 3 years from about 59 to 62, I guess it was, and he kind of retired, semi-retired in a way, but he would find himself practicing at the bottom of the, was it the Brooklyn Bridge?
Williamsburg Bridge,
that's it. And he would just practice. He would stay there, and he would practice and play.
So we've asked all the hosts to bring in a selection. What did you bring in for us today?
I brought in St. Thomas, only because that was really one of the songs that really, really did it for me with Sonny. Because he really kind of picked up in a way at that time when this recording was done, around 56, 57, with the Calypso craze that was happening via Harry Belafonte. And he picked this up from a, I believe it was a Bahamian folk song.
Okay.
And improvised on it and became one of his biggest numbers.
I think it's probably the biggest hit that he ever had.
It's really.
I mean, and not many jazz artists get a hit.
Sonny did.
That's interesting you say about the Calypso craze. So you were on the air then.
I wasn't quite on the air at that point. Now, this is late. I got on the air in the early 1960s.
Got it.
Okay.
But
I grew up listening to, you know, all kinds of
music. You remember the craze, though. You remember what it meant for the music industry.
It was big. I mean, Harry Belafonte really exposed that.
Mm-hmm.
And became, matter of fact, Belafonte was like the first artist to ever have a million-selling album. But because he had that Calypso, and it just attracted a lot of attention.
What is it about that groove?
The groove? It's a very sexy groove.
Yeah.
And Belafonte was a very sexy performer.
Well, sure.
You know? And Sonny picked up on it and said, this is a sexy song. So, hence, sex sells, as they say.
Cue it up, Robbie. Let's hear that sexy groove. Thank you, Bob. Any other words about Sonny you want to share?
No, I hope he hits the centennial birth.
Oh, man, me too.
You know, the way he's going.
We'll do it again.
Why not? Yeah. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on The Late Set.
That's Alex Aref's conversation with WRTI's veteran all-star host of quite a few shows, including The Sunday Brunch, Bob Craig. And we heard St. Thomas from a very, very famous record.
You can't have a conversation like this without St. Thomas. So,
of course not.
Thanks to Bob for bringing that in. I think we should hand the baton off to the newest member of our jazz family at WRTI. This is our associate program director for jazz, a deep listener, a big Sonny Rollins fan, Mr. Julian Booker.
And just so you know, I was a bit surprised at what he picked because, you know, when you're the program director of a jazz radio station, you don't play 11-minute tunes typically.
Well, so. I think he's taking advantage of the platform.
Yeah, he's like, okay, I finally get to play this one.
So let's hear your conversation with Julian Booker.
Julian Booker, welcome.
Thank you so much, Josh. Glad to be here and glad to be talking about Sonny.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you got?
So I picked a record from 1962. It was actually the first record that Sonny recorded and released after The Bridge with pretty much the same lineup. In fact, it might be entirely the same lineup. The record's called What's New, and the song is If Ever I Would Leave You, his version of a song that was originally, I think, in Camelot. I think that was
That's right. Take us to Camelot,
absolutely.
Lerner and Lowe.
It does not sound much like the version that was in Camelot. But the reason that I wanted to pick this is, you know, it happened in such a seminal point in Sonny Rollins' career. Obviously, so much is made mythically of him playing on the Williamsburg Bridge and coming back and releasing this record. But, you know, this could have been a total novelty record because it is all based on South American rhythms.
Yes.
And, you know, it is I think a year before Get Gilberto came out, but it could totally have been a novelty, and it's not. It is just an incredible album through and through. But this first track in particular contains, I think it's about 12 minutes, and it probably contains 9 minutes of Sonny Rollins soloing, something like that. There's a short Jim Hall solo at the beginning, but then it's all Sonny, and he plays with the form of the melody over and over and over in so many different ways, and I think it really showcases just his inventiveness as a player, and also how, you know, you can have a 3.5 minute song that is just magic and that's all it ever needs, but I love how this shows you can have a 12 minute song that could go on for another 20 minutes, I think, anyway, to hear Sonny soloing.
I was always a great fan of the Sonny Rollins cadenzas when he did live performances.
Yep.
They were always small miracles. And let's hear a little bit of If Ever I Would Leave You from What's New, Sonny Rollins on The Late Set. Jim Hall and Sonny Rollins were such a great combination.
Yeah.
Because Jim Hall once told me, and many other people who asked him about how he played, it was from Sonny Rollins, and it was from studying horn players and the way that Jim plays these beautiful linear solos is very similar to how an instrumentalist, a horn player, would operate. So it's always a pleasure to hear these sessions for RCA Victor, The Bridge, and What's New, where you get to hear the two of them really work together.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because obviously this is, I say obviously, a piano-less combo. And my favorite Sonny Rollins is Sonny Rollins without a piano, personally. And you can hear it in that bit that we just heard, but you have Sonny kind of sitting in the back just doing these little stabs, which is exactly what Jim Hall does at the beginning while Sonny is soloing, and then he sort of comes back to it at the end. And yeah, they complement each other so well. And there's something about, you know, with a piano in the back of any band, it can take up a lot of space. And I love the piano in jazz, but it can take up a lot of space. And I think without that, and this just being a quartet performance without a piano, it just opens everything up. And when you get towards the very end and Sonny really starts to take off, I think you can really hear that space and really hear it kind of just completely open up and go into the stratosphere.
Man, thank you so much for sharing this piece.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Did you have some experiences with seeing him play or anything?
I had one experience, one opportunity to see Sonny play. It was in, I actually looked this up before I came in because I wanted to make sure I had it right. It was in the fall of, and now I'm going to forget, 2008 or 2009. But he played at the Kimmel Center and it was a great show. And I am fairly certain that he closed with the Everywhere Calypso. I think that's what it was. It was definitely a Calypso. And to, you know, go back to what I was saying about how I could listen to Sonny solo forever. In my mind, that Calypso to close the show went on for like 40 minutes. I'm sure it didn't, but, and I remember he had a wireless mic as well. So I was sitting behind the stage up like by the, you know, organ pipes, and I was just watching him just do circles around the stage, around the entire band, just playing all these different forms of the Calypso. So that was a great experience. And then, you know, it probably wasn't too long after that that he's stopped playing regularly. So yeah, I was just so thrilled to have that one opportunity. I imagine you saw Sonny on a number of occasions.
Yeah, a few, yeah. I enjoyed a performance of Sonny's I saw at Summer Stage in New York 1 year. I don't remember what year it was, but he did Don't Stop the Carnival for that and just had these cadenza moments. And I always appreciated Sonny playing that music. You know, his parents were from the Virgin Islands. One time when I interviewed him, he described wanting to have what he called a primitive sound, and it was to really sort of capture fundamentally the folk element. And Caribbean culture is really prominent in jazz music. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like anytime Sonny was playing that music, he was tapping into his life experience and just kind of tapping into one of the fundamental roots.
Yep.
And you could tell it gave him great joy and that he shared it with the rest of us.
Yep.
Julian Booker, thank you so much for dropping in on the late set and for laying some Sonny Rollins on us.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Julian's pick, If Ever I Would Leave You, from the album What's New. I'm enjoying these picks so far. Maybe I should share, if you don't mind, a personal Sonny Rollins story of my own.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
No Danish butter cookies involved this time. But you probably remember the moment in 2007 when Sonny performed at Carnegie Hall with a trio.
Yeah.
And this trio featured Christian McBride on bass and Roy Haynes on drums.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at that concert?
I was.
So I think it would be an understatement to call this an event.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. And at that time, there were two jazz critics at the New York Times, Ben Ratliff and myself. And, you know, it was a given that anytime something like this happened, one of us would be on the beat. Well, by an accident of timing, Ben was on the West Coast during this time. I think he was on a book tour. And I was heading to Argentina on my honeymoon. And so neither of us was going to be able to review Sonny at Carnegie Hall. And this was a matter of some, you know, panic. And, you know, there was communication with Sonny's team. Shout out to Terry Hinte, his longtime publicist and advocate and confidant and so many other things. Terry is one of the good ones. I let Terry know, you know, Ben can't do it. I can't do it. The Times is going to figure something else out. As they did, they brought in Fred Kaplan to review the concert. You know, so sadly, I missed that one. Fast forward about 6 weeks, maybe a couple of months, and I was headed to the Barcelona Jazz Festival to give some talks. And Sonny happened to be on the bill. So I get on my plane, JFK or LaGuardia, and as I'm walking onto the plane, I see Sonny Rollins sitting in first class. And so, you know, I just say hello. I figure that's that. But, you know, I said, oh, you know, hi, Sonny, it's Nate Chenin. And he said, the first thing he said was, oh, Nate, because I was about to say, I'm sorry I missed your concert. Right? He says, oh, Nate, congratulations on your wedding. And I thought that was such a beautiful, beautiful little thing. I didn't even think that he would have known, you know, or cared, you know? That's my little, I went down, I sat down in my seat, and before turning off my phone for the transatlantic flight, I texted my wife and I said, Sonny Rollins just congratulated us on our wedding.
And then at that point, you had a free pass to cancel any plans with your wife to interview Sonny Rollins in the future.
Right. I must say that Argentina and the honeymoon was a grand old time.
Beautiful.
And I got to catch up with Sonny on many subsequent occasions, including once with Roy Haynes and Christian McBride.
Yeah.
For his 80th birthday? Was that what that was?
That's right.
Yeah.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
You know what else isn't too shabby is the selection from our evening jazz host, Nicole Sweeney. I got to talk to her and get her favorite from Sonny.
I've heard her playing this song on Evening Jazz as a lead up to this conversation, so I know what it is.
Oh, well, let's let the people figure it out.
All right.
The hostess with the mostest. Absolutely. Nicole Sweeney, welcome.
I try. I've been waiting my turn.
Open up the door and take it. Take it. And take us on an adventure with Sonny Rollins. What do you got for us?
Oh, man. I saw Sonny Rollins at the Detroit Jazz Festival. Goodness. And now I have to think of what year it was. It was about 15 years ago. And, you know, when it comes to festivals, there's usually two shows happening around the same time. There's some overlapping. One is on one side of the festival. Well, I made sure that, I mean, I timed it out. Sonny Rollins is going to be on stage at a particular time. I have to be there. And it was interesting. It's almost like they planned it perfectly. Sonny was on stage. The sun was starting to set. It got a little cooler. It was around Labor Day time, so it was still hot in the day, but it was just perfect timing for Sonny to come on stage. His hair, I remember it was, the wind was blowing and Sonny's hair was just blowing along with it. And he was wailing on that sax and it was just watching greatness in real time. I feel like I'm one of those late bloomers where I didn't get a chance to see a lot of the legends live. So seeing Sonny in that moment was unforgettable. I have a picture of him just doing his thing. I don't even remember talking. I just remember taking it all in, the great Sonny Rollins.
Yeah. What are you going to share with us here?
Ooh, Alfie's theme from the 1966 film Alfie. And they reached out to Sonny Rollins directly. He was playing at Ronnie Scott in London. And so the director reached out to him directly to, you know, put together some music for this movie that was about a player, a playboy who just went from lady to lady to lady. And even before knowing about the movie, hearing this song, Alfie's theme, you can kind of tell there's some sultriness to it. There's almost like a little kiss on the neck, a tap on the shoulder as soon as Sonny starts to play. It's one of my favorites from the saxophone colossus, Sonny Rollins.
Let's hear it. Super hip arrangements by Oliver Nelson.
The great Oliver Nelson, absolutely. It's funny how you started to sing that. I have a friend that has said to me, how do you sing to songs without words? Because whenever I'm listening to jazz, I'm singing along with it. And she, not being a jazz head, doesn't really understand that there are words.
You know what my answer to that question is? What? How do I sing to it? In the wrong key. That's right.
But even just as Sonny starts to play, it feels almost flirtatious. I feel like we shy away from describing music and connecting it to like lovemaking and romance. But I think that's what really makes it so cool.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Alfie's theme. I feel like Sonny really got who the character Alfie was. And you can tell he's a playboy note by note.
This from the recording on Impulse Records, but we should say also that Sonny Rollins was in the film.
He sure was.
And it's a really amazing film with Michael Caine and who else is in that? Vivian Merchant in an incredible performance, The funny thing is Sonny Rollins was nominated for a Grammy for Best Original Score for this.
Look at that. But that was his first.
Yeah, but ended up losing out to Maurice Jarre for Dr. Zhivago.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Excellent film, though.
Yeah.
And an excellent choice for Sonny Rollins.
Thank you. I mean, there's so many to choose from.
I know.
It's hard. And look, if you play another Sonny song, I'm probably going to say it's my favorite. But when I do think about Sonny, I just go to Alfie's theme. It puts a smile on my face and in my heart. And I feel like I kind of walk, I glide when Alfie's theme comes on.
Well, thank you so much for sharing it with us on The Late Set.
Thank you for having me.
That was Alfie's theme, of course, from the film soundtrack, Nicole Sweeney's pick,
We've got one more for you. This is by the venerable J. Michael Harrison. I learned that J. Michael's long-running Friday evening show, The Bridge...
Yes, about that.
...is actually named in part for the Sonny Rollins album and the legendary Sonny Rollins sabbatical. I don't know why I had never thought to make that connection. So let's hear J. Michael explain it in his own words. This is In Conversation with Alex Arif.
The great J. Michael Harrison, what's up?
It's great to be here with you. Always great to acknowledge the wonderful Sonny Rollins.
Yeah.
You know, Sonny, wow. I mean, like you said, coming up on 95 years old, I think one of the things that I look at Sonny Rollins, you know, just longevity. I mean, obviously born in 1930, but this is a guy that for decades has been a significant figure. And, you know, that burst of activity that he had in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
for, you know, maybe like a 6-year period, he put out about 20 records. And he was on another 20 records.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, just imagine that. You know, we're not talking about one record every year or every other year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just producing that type of output is phenomenal. And do you want me to reveal my selection?
Well, save it for a second.
Okay, all right.
Before we get to the tune that you brought in, you are also somebody who champions elders, like frequently, if not weekly, thinking about their place in the history of the music, but also like championing the ones that are still alive. So what is the value of doing that now when he's still with us?
Well, I always say celebrate me while I'm alive. All right. Don't wait for me to pass. Of course, it's appreciated, but, you know, maybe I can enjoy it with you as well.
Yeah.
You know, recently I had the opportunity to, you know, you talk about another great musician who's been doing it forever. Recently, I had the opportunity to attend a celebration for Marshall Allen's 101st birthday. You know, so just to be there in that environment with the individual, he played for close to 2 hours that night.
Yeah.
You know, it's just wonderful. And, you know, we lost, you know, not too long ago, I believe 2023, we lost Larry McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, local to Philadelphia, and Bootsy Barnes before that. But we were able to do some things bringing those two together.
Yeah, yeah.
And allowing them to perform. So, and also, you know, the generations that are coming, the folks that may have just heard a name or maybe never heard the name. So that type of exposure to an individual who's still with us.
Right.
You know, who still, you know, does interviews and what have you, although he may not be able to play. There's a lot of information,
mm-hmm.
You know, as I mentioned, I mean, here's a guy that really, you know, as I said, that period from about 52, 53, right on up to, you know, around 59, the amount of output that he had. But, you know, in that period also, you know, Charlie Parker passes away,
mm-hmm.
you know, in around 55. So to have the opportunity to touch on someone who's been so significant, who's had such a tremendous amount, a prolific, you know, amount of output. It's kind of, I think, our duty to do
yes.
that. So
I
feel honored, you know, to have these type of opportunities.
What did you bring in for us today? What tune are we going to explore?
So this is, you know, The Bridge. And this record holds a special place in my heart on a few levels. The Bridge, which is now, you know, coming up on 30 years of the radio show, The Bridge.
The Bridge that you host here at
yes.
WRTI.
Yes.
Friday nights, 10 p.m.
To 2 a.m., right.
To 2 a.m.
Probably the first 6 months that I was on the air with the program, I didn't have a name for it. I didn't, you know, I wanted to give it some thought because the show that I was doing prior to that at another radio station was titled Is That Jazz? And
That's a great name for a show.
Hey, man, you know, and if you listen closely to me, at some point, usually at some point during every show, I say along the lines, something along the lines of, you're listening to the bridge between bebop and hip hop.
Right.
It's an eclectic mix of music presented from maybe an Is That Jazz perspective. So that's, you know, a little love for the first show. But, you know, the bridge, as I went through that process and polled, you know, a few people, and what do you think? Everybody had their suggestions, but I kept coming back to, well, and Is That Jazz is also the title of a Gil Scott Heron selection. Mm-hmm. So I kept coming back to, okay, Gil has, and Brian had, they have a record titled Bridges. Bridges connect people.
Sure.
James Brown said, let's take it to the bridge, you know, and Sonny Rollins, wow. When you start thinking about that record, the bridge, where was he at in his life? And, you know, and how important was that time he spent playing on the bridge? Well, actually, he found a nook. All right. He had to go up steps to get to that nook.
Okay.
All right.
So this is the myth that we're talking about, like the mythology.
All right. So that time that he spent, you know, playing and exhaling to an extent, because, you know, just going back to that period, again, Charlie Parker passes away. His output was phenomenal. But when you get up to 59, you know, what happens? Kind of Blue happens.
Shape of Jazz to Come.
All right. Ornette brings Shape of Jazz to Come. Giant Steps, mm-hmm. you know, comes. Dave Brubeck brings you Take Five.
Yeah, big year.
You know what I mean? And things are changing. And, you know, he was feeling a lot of pressure and what have you. So he spent 3 years or so just connecting. You know, reconnecting, finding himself, searching. So just that story is such a phenomenal story. So when it came to naming the show, when I started looking at all of those things, it just made sense for the show to be called The Bridge. And that's how we got to that. And then, you know, the specific selection off of this record that I chose, God Bless the Child. You know, and if you look at the lyrics of that Billie Holiday's, mm-hmm. you know, piece, it's, you know, again, you know, there's parts of it that kind of points to that individual, that child, you know, being blessed to do things their way and what have you. And Sonny taking that hiatus, taking that time off, a reset, if you will.
Yeah. So is he the child in to you?
You know, in some respects, yeah. You
I
know
like
what
that.
I mean? Yeah, well, in some respects. So, and then that piece is such a, I mean, it's such a phenomenal piece. When I haven't, and not that I'm looking for it, but I haven't really experienced a bad version of God Bless the Child. You know, it seems like there's always a level of emotion, every mm-hmm. version that I've heard, and sincerity. And with Sonny's piece, I mean, it speaks to me. I feel it, you know, in my heart, in my bones. And, you know, it's just a special piece. And
let's listen to a little bit of it and talk a little bit on the way out.
Thank you. I don't think whatever's going on in your life, if you sit down and you listen to that, it's going to take you to a place. You know what I mean? You're going to escape for a minute or two. And that song, when I listened to it, Albert Eiler said to us that music is the healing force of the universe. Mm-hmm. That song, it removes you from everything else that's going on in the world, for that period of time. Now, you may have to, face it once again after, you listen to it. But I think that's a powerful piece that resonates and it's impactful. It affects you. And
I think it's the arrangement, too. The way it starts with the bass. Jim isn't in the picture, so it's just trio. And Sonny was very fond of the trio. But that's what I've got from the beginning of that tune. That's what affected me most of all, how bare it is. And
yeah.
It kind of, your ears just kind of focus in.
So, yeah.
Thank you for bringing that in.
No, man, it's a special piece, you know. And, that record, just going back to that time in his life, that's 1962 it's recorded. So after that hiatus, he takes time off, 1959, and does his reset and comes back in 62 with that. And with all the notoriety that Ornette and Miles and Brubeck and Mingus and, those guys that were getting, I think people were anticipating something else. But it seems like they accepted and appreciated where he was, with this. So, it's something that I just wanted to share, if we're talking about Sonny Rollins, how this specific record is important to me and, how that song, I think, is so impactful.
Thank you so much, J. Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Alex.
God bless the child who's got his own. And Sonny Rollins certainly had his own. That's the selection from J. Michael Harrison, music from The Bridge. Sonny Rollins, The Bridge, from the host of The Bridge.
That 80th birthday concert also included the great Jim Hall.
It sure did.
And one of those people who, you talk to musicians and so many of them, they speak about Sonny as this kind of accidental guru. It's like Jim Hall would always talk about him as just this master. And you get the sense that it's not as if the two of them ever sat down and talked about music. It was just the imbibing and the communion. And Sonny, has only, beautiful things to say about Jim as well.
And that was the second hookup between Sonny Rollins and Jim Hall that we heard on this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because we heard Julian Booker's pick from What's New.
One of the great carriers of the language.
It's so funny. Like, Sonny, when I think about those RCA Victor years, they're very transitional in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like if you think about the records that came out, just in the span of three records, you've got The Bridge, you've got What's New, and then you've got Our Man in Jazz. Is that what it's called? It's the one he did with
Don Cherry. Yeah. And then somewhere in there, around 1963, I think, is that really, really wild and wonderful summit with Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah.
His great hero on the tenor. And you hear, when we talk about like generation gaps in jazz, Sonny, who revered Coleman Hawkins, he's already playing in a very modern mode, and he's influenced at that point by Ornette Coleman and Don Cherry, and yet they're connecting on these standards, the version of All the Things You Are on that album with this just incredible Paul Blay piano solo. I mean, to me, that is like, that's such a perfect portrait of continuum and sort of sublimated conflict, in jazz, because they are speaking the same language, but they're also speaking totally different languages.
They are, yeah.
Well, this has been a really fun rap session, listening session around the life and music of Sonny Rollins. I guess we haven't said it outright, so let's say it together. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Sonny.
Yeah.
Thank you for being your whole self all the time, for bringing us so much light and music and inspiration and perspiration.
Yeah.
And conviction.
And heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of heart.
It means a lot to a lot of people, first and foremost in this room, the two of us.
I continually maintain, as long as Sonny Rollins is with us in the world, it's a good world. Yeah.
Amen to that.
The Late Set is a production of WRTI, made possible by WRTI members. Thank you, members. Hosted by me, Josh Jackson, and him, Nate Janin. And the show is produced by Alex Arif.
Special thanks to our WRTI family, folks who stopped by the studio to help us out: Julian Booker, Nicole Sweeney, Bob Craig, and J. Michael Harrison.
Our production assistants for the video were Delia Joyce and Melanie Spiegel. And a big thank you to Melanie, who just wrapped up her work study with us after two amazing years at WRTI. If you've enjoyed any of our video work the past year or two, like the jazz quizzes or the 30 Thursday series, it's all because of her fingerprint. Best of luck to you, Melanie.
Robbie Webb is our assistant production manager. Our operations and production manager is Tyler McClure. Associate general manager for content and programming is Josh Jackson. And Bill Johnson is WRTI's general manager.
Stop by WRTI.org to see everything else we're cooking up here in Philadelphia and beyond. Thanks to member support. Thank you, members. And we'll see you soon. Bye-ya.
There's so much great jazz happening around Philly. The tricky part is keeping track of it all. Well, we've got you. Every week, we send you a hand-picked list of shows, concerts, and must-hear events. It's called Moments Notice. It's free, it's easy, and it's your guide to the best live jazz in town. Sign up now at WRTI.org/momentsnotice. Your guide to Philly jazz at a moment's notice.